Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Like a lot of you, I anticipated that Super Bowl week would be all about the Super Bowl, and we would be talking about the Chiefs, and we would be talking about the 49ers and what was likely to happen in that game. But yesterday afternoon, as news broke about what happened with Kobe Bryant, I was stunned. You were stunned. I think everyone across the nation and around the world who has watched Kobe Bryant play basketball and watched him grow up effectively over the past generation in the public eye was stunned. Kobe, at 41 years old, was and is a larger-than-life character, someone who seemed absolutely indestructible and someone who still seemed, even in retirement, very, very young. And certainly of late, what we had come to see with Kobe Bryant was his growth and evolution as a dad. He had just had his fourth daughter. He seemed very happy and content in a way, frankly, that most are not when their athletic careers come to a close. And he seemed like an athlete who had made that transition very, very well and had a lot to offer to the country and to the world and certainly to his family and friends for another several generations. That we would have been able to watch him grow. And for me personally, we're around the same age. And I think when you are around the same age as an athlete, I'm 40, Kobe 41 years old, you feel like you know that person a little bit because you've gone through many of life's steps alongside them in some way, fatherhood, marriage, growth in career. And it's just it's a challenge to see this happen because, in addition to the fact that Kobe Bryant is one of the most famous athletes in the world, he's also, I think, why this story has such a pull on people everywhere, even people who may or may not be very big sports fans, is because it also combines two of the biggest fears of every parent. When you become a parent, your number one fear, dad, mom, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, it doesn't matter who you are or what your background is, your number one fear when you become a parent is something bad happening to one of your children. And to have a 13-year-old daughter on that helicopter alongside of Kobe Bryant, the number one fear of every parent is realized in that moment when that 13-year-old girl, along with several other people, husbands, wives, dads, moms, brothers, sisters that went down in that helicopter, something bad happening to your kid is the number one fear of every parent. The second fear, I think the two biggest fears of every parent were realized in this tragic incident. It's something happening to you, the parent, when your other kids are young. As soon as you have kids, and I'm speaking for myself, I've got three boys who are, in fact, my oldest turns 12 today, and then I've got a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. When you have those kids, your immediate focus becomes, I want to make sure that I am there for them for as long as I possibly can be, and certainly to get them into adulthood. And so in this horrible, tragic incident, we had really the two biggest fears of every parent realized in the same awful incident, which is something happening to one of your young children and something happening to you while they are young. And this really strikes home, I think, for a lot of people. I bet a lot of you, as you were laying in bed last night, preparing to go to bed, you laid there and thought about these fears yourself. You wondered what might have happened if it had been you or your wife. I think it brings home so many of the fears of parents everywhere. And it doesn't matter if you're a superstar and one of the best athletes in the world, one of the best athletes in the history of your sport. It humanizes in a tragic way what we saw happen yesterday, and it is sobering, it is shocking, and it is particularly difficult, I think, to grapple with for many people out there, whether you were a big Kobe Bryant fan or not. It is just a staggering difficulty. And I think you saw that resonate across the world of sports, well beyond the world of basketball, into basically all walks of life. And in thinking about it, the sort of the analogy that made me remember is it feels almost to me like when Princess Di died. And that's not a sports connection. Certainly, if you want to talk about sports, there are lots of athletes who have died. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is probably the most prominent in sort of a shocking way. Now, that obviously happened while he was in the middle of his sport. But to me, the way that people responded back in, I believe it was 1997, when Princess Di, at around the same age as Kobe Bryant, this larger-than-life iconic figure, died in a tragic incident totally unexpectedly. Now, she died in a traffic accident in Paris, France. But the outpouring of grief feels very similar to what we saw in that moment in time. And I think what both of those individuals would have in common is that they are global icons who both felt larger than life and also were struck down in the prime of their life long before you would have anticipated it ever happening in a sudden an awful event. And so, frankly, we thought that today's show would be talking about Super Bowl. But instead, for the entire show, we're going to be talking about Kobe, his life, his legacy, his impact on many of the lives of our listeners across the country and around the world. And we've got several guests. Petros Papadakis is going to come on with us, AM 570 LA Sports. He usually comes on Tuesday, but I texted him and I said, hey, man, will you get up early with us, 3:20 a.m. in L.A.? He is scheduled to wake up and join us. And so Doug Gottlieb is going to be with us. He had become a friend of Kobe Bryant's. Their daughters and kids, they lived near each other in Orange County and had become somewhat close in recent times. So he's going to come on with us here in hour one as well and talk about Kobe. But I want to bring in, we talk and we joke a lot about Laker fans on here because we have a couple of huge Laker fans with Danny G and Roberto. And Danny G's with me here in Miami. Roberto is out in the LA studio. But I want to bring both you guys in. First of all, Danny G, I mean, you are a Laker homer. You are a dyed-in-the-wool Laker fan. Kobe is of your generation. What were your thoughts? When did you become aware of this? And kind of what have you been thinking about since you heard the news?
Man, it felt like a bad dream. It still does. I was on a flight here to Miami out of LAX, and it's crazy because Bill Plaschke, the longtime sports writer from
Los Angeles, great column for the LA Times. Yeah,
he was on my flight. And he saw my Laker tattoo when we were boarding, and we had a quick conversation about the Lakers. Kobe is part of LA identity. I mean, he's part of the city's...
Not part of. For many people, he is the identity. It's crazy. I mean, around the world, he is, for most people. I know LeBron is there now. I know Magic Johnson. But when you say Los Angeles and you mention the world of sports, I would say Kobe is by far, for most people out there, the very first thing that people think of when they think of the Los Angeles sports community.
Oh, for sure. When you have a number 8 or a number 24 on, you get dozens of people yelling at you, Kobe! And it's just part of our daily, just simple things. In our Sherman Oaks studio, when we throw a piece of paper in the wastebasket, we yell Kobe.
Yeah.
He is part of the fabric of the city, and it's surreal how quiet things got in Los Angeles and how everybody gathered at the Staples Center. What horrible timing for the Grammys, too, because
right. It
was like a death happened, and they're all gathered inside, and Alicia Keys is like, what do I do? She opened and did that Boys to Men classic song, which was cool, but it felt like losing a close family member. I heard from friends and family that I haven't heard from in a while, and I think that this hits home because it does feel like we were all close to him. It felt like we all knew him personally, and some of us in media did get to meet him, and he was so cool, and to watch what he was doing after basketball, because you remember he was so obsessed and such an obsessed player that people worried about him and what would happen to him once he didn't have basketball anymore. But he took that competitive fire that he's famous for with him into his post-basketball career with his company and coaching his daughter and everything else he was doing with his family. And what a huge loss, man. I mean, I watched grown men cry on TV yesterday, and I'm sitting there choked up, tearing up as well. All of us had a cry yesterday. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. I think the daughter and coaching his daughter's basketball team and the degree to which he had transitioned so well into a post-athletic career, a lot of us out there, regardless of what your backgrounds are, do that, right? You coach Little League basketball, and that was one of the first things I thought as some of these details came out and we heard that he was on the helicopter traveling for his daughter's basketball games or practice. When I hopped on a plane, and I think a lot of parents think about this, I on Saturday flew down here for the Super Bowl for the week, and I left directly from the Little League basketball game that I was coaching for my 9-year-old. I always think that regardless of how good you are at a sport or bad you are at a sport, coaching little kids will humanize that sport for you. And I think there are a lot of you out there who have been involved in, you know, youth league athletics with your kids, either coaching or taking them around, and you've been in that experience of traveling and going to a game. And I think one of the reasons why this is striking so many people in such a deep way is the humanizing nature of the way it happened and the fact that this realizes two of the biggest fears of every parent, something awful happening to one of your children and something awful happening to you in a sudden way that takes you away from being able to raise your children. Roberto, you're out in L.A. And most of the crew is out in L.A. And I'm sure that the city almost feels like it has a pall over it and there's sort of a stunned feeling. There are a lot of Fox Sports employees that are from L.A. and they were all flying out today too. And they said as news broke, you know, sometimes you had Wi-Fi on the plane, sometimes you did not. And when you got to the point where the news sort of rapidly spread through the airport and through the airplane, had people that just kind of looking at their phones in stunned disbelief. Scott Shapiro, who's the vice president of Fox Sports Radio, was flying out here, and I texted him about the news, and it took him a couple hours to get back to me. And he said he hadn't gotten Wi-Fi on the plane until he suddenly saw people start talking about it on the plane who had been plugged in. Because, you know, you're getting on a plane in L.A., flying all the way to Miami. That's a five and a half hour flight at least. You sort of enter sometimes that communication void, and suddenly everybody becomes aware of it, and there's sort of a communal grieving as everyone contemplates the impact of the Kobe Bryant death and what it means to the larger sports community. What can you tell us about the vibe in LA right now, Roberto?
The whole city is in mourning, man. It's just a sad. It's been a sad day. It's been a long when the news broke at 9. I heard the news 10:00 a.m. on Sunday. It's been a long, tough whole day, man. It's very sad, emotional. I was in church with my wife because I hadn't gone to church in a while. So I'm like, all right, I got to be a good Catholic again. And then she pulled out her phone and had this look on her face that I was like, what the heck is going on? And we didn't have our daughter with us, so I was kind of scared. And then she's like, well, here, come over here. We walked out of Mass, and then look at this. And after I realized, okay, thank God it wasn't my daughter, then I saw what it said. I was like, oh, my God, like, is this true or what? And then after a while, after it finally set in that it was true, it kind of broke down and started crying right there outside of Mass with my wife. You know, it's sad because when Kobe was a rookie in the NBA, I was a sophomore in high school. When he won his first NBA title, I was 19. When the Lakers lost in the finals in 08, I got married. I got married to my wife that same September, and when they beat the Celtics in 2010, I turned 30 years old. And then when he finally became a full-time father in 2016, I had just become a full-time father when my daughter was born in September 27, 2015. And seeing him become a great father and husband was awesome. And the fact that he's leaving behind his wife and three daughters is extremely gut-wrenching. I never thought I would ever get so emotional for the loss of someone I never knew personally. It seems downright silly, but the joy he brought to my life is tremendous, and the memories will be everlasting. His work ethic was virtually unmatched. And that's about it, man. Sad.
I think you're hitting on something that certainly for people who are around our age, his life points of demarcation, as you just laid out, are very similar to many of ours.
Yeah.
You know, getting married, going and advancing in your career, having kids, becoming a dad, growing in life. And it's there are always, again, I said I'm 40, he's 41, athletes who you feel like, because they're around the same age as you, that you have something in common with just based on your trajectory of life. And certainly there are people of all ages that are impacted. But I think if you are a young dad like you are, Roberto, or like I am, relatively speaking, again,
yep,
this hits home in a way that that I think transcends certainly well beyond the world of sports.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We bring in now Petros Papadakis, who usually joins us on Tuesdays in the final hour of the show, but because of all of the news surrounding Kobe, I wanted Petros to come on with us as early as possible, and he joins us now to start the show on Monday. Petros, where were you when you heard the news, and what was your reaction?
Well, I think it was the same as most people, you know, especially in the media. You know, I was just sitting at home with my family and I got the news, and at first, you know, you thought it was a joke and the way news spreads itself, and then, you know, it just kind of slowly became really, really horrifying. And then there's the whole social media part of it.
Yeah.
Where there's all kinds of erroneous reports and you're chasing around the information, and, you know, now it's going to be about the fog and why was the helicopter up in the first place, and, you know, that'll all kind of play out in the next couple weeks. But really just a shock. I mean, that's the word most people are using, and there's a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people that never even saw the guy play in person, you know, up close, and they are hurting, you know, legitimately really hurting globally. You know, a lot of people relate with this guy just because of their own lives, you know, watching his ups and downs in life and his career, you know, while they were having their own, you know, for the last 22 years or something. So people are really hurting in this city. There's no doubt about it. And all around the world, because it is a terrible tragedy.
For people in Los Angeles, what did Kobe Bryant mean to LA?
Well, you know, I mean, it was always kind of polarizing. To be honest, you know, what did he mean? We're talking about a guy who was one of the guys who came out of high school in the Kevin Garnett era of going straight to the NBA. And I mean, he's somebody we've known since he was 16. I mean, we know who he took to the prom.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know about all his life's ups and downs. You know, it's kind of interesting because when we started covering Kobe, well, I was a football player, you know, but, you know, we kind of learned to do radio or media by covering Kobe, you know, talking about what was going on with Kobe. And in his life, when he started playing basketball, he was certainly getting a lot of attention, but there was no social media and all that. And all that stuff, of course, developed while his career was happening. And he sort of like the first big-time NBA superstar to kind of have that happen in his career, or he was the top of the pyramid, you know, while it did. So, you know, he had a lot to navigate personally. And, you know, no matter what you thought about Kobe or didn't, you know, as far as the day-to-day stuff goes and what he did or didn't do, because there was always an argument about it. And I was certainly, you know, a pretty negative guy covering a lot of the stuff he did. But that being said, it's terribly devastating to have it, and obviously so abruptly and in such an odd and really just kind of cutting way, you know, for everybody. And it's going to be an interesting few weeks to see how the city and everybody processes this, because it's going to go on for a long time. People are really in pain.
One of the things I start off the show, and you've got young kids too, this, I think, touches a lot of different people in the way that it happens because of the tragedy of this helicopter crash that happened so suddenly. But I think this probably speaks to you as a parent, too, because you have young kids. As soon as you have young kids, your worst fear is something like this happening to a kid. So we, I think, can't understate the fact that his daughter was with him on that helicopter, his 13-year-old daughter. And
right,
also,
and other young people, you know, and that's what he was. He was doing something for young people. And
yeah,
that's kind of what I'm trying to say. It's like whatever you thought about the guy, there's no argument that he was a great father who cared about his kids, cared about the development of young people. You know, putting a bunch of young people on your helicopter that you commute with is a generous thing. He died doing that. You know, he really was dedicated to his family, and that's something, you know, for all of us that have kids, and even those of us that don't, people of us that were kids that had yeah. parents, you know, we can all really appreciate that. And that's the tragedy, but also kind of, I think, the redemption in his life was the way he treated his family, his daughter specifically, you know, and that it was very public. And that's really the sad part about it. But, you know, that's really what resonated with me watching this kind of play out was, you know, that he really was a great dad and really was dedicated to his family and what was going on with them and their development, the young girls, and that's the part of it that's pretty hard to bear.
We're talking to Petros Papadakis, AM 570 LA Sports, Petros and Money Show. You can find him on Twitter at The Old P. I'm Clay Travis. Petros joins us every single week, and he is, in many ways, the voice of LA Sports Talk. You will have a show this afternoon, and it's almost like a communal grief, right? I mean, we're doing our show based on Kobe this morning because I feel like even at the Super Bowl, there's nothing else to talk about today other than Kobe. We'll open up phone lines and things like that. Have you had a show that you can think of that would be in any way similar to this one? Because the reason
no.
why I ask is, yeah, it feels a little bit like almost, you remember this, Princess Di, right? Like, I mean, in the way that you have a global icon who's almost identical in age at the time that happened to her back in 1997, where for England there was this massive outgrowth and outpouring of grief in a way that we had never really seen in England before. There aren't even very many analogies that you can draw easily in the world of sports. I mean, certainly Dale Earnhardt Sr. With his death, if you're a big NASCAR fan, that was a incredibly traumatic event for NASCAR.
Yeah.
There have been Roberto Clemente, Thurman Munson. You know, guys like that, but those were so long ago.
Right.
I feel like this hasn't happened.
I thought about Otis Redding, you know. I mean, people that died not in my lifetime, but that were very young and very impactful at the time they passed. I thought about Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, the greatest guitar player, one of them that ever lived, died in a helicopter crash. I mean, I thought Doc Rivers said it best, you know. Most of the young people playing basketball right now or just that are basketball fans, or if you're on Earth, you know, Kobe's their Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Growing up, you know, even though a lot of the guys in the league probably don't know Kobe at this point, you know, he was their Michael Jordan. And, I can't remember anything like this happening. So impactful. I mean, I remember being on the air when John Wooden died, and you know, when somebody passes, you know, you do a lot of tributes and stuff like this. But you know, he was like a 99-year-old man.
Right.
This is devastating and new territory. But then again, by the time we get on the air, you know, there's going to be a whole day of lamentation, and I'm not exactly sure what direction we're taking in it. And it's obvious that we're going to talk about it. We're going to be at Justin Turner's golf tournament, you know, and he was friends with Kobe and they supported
yeah.
each other. And that's going to end up being, you know, all of these little different places around the Southland have become, you know, spots for vigils, you know, where in Calabasas, where the helicopter went down, at the Academy, where he had just built in Thousand Oaks, where they were headed, obviously at Staples Center last night, And I don't know if that's going to go on until today. I would imagine it does. So it's going to be a rough week in Los Angeles.
We talk about the Kobe Bryant impact, also his wife and three daughters who are left behind, not to mention all the other people with families that were involved in this this helicopter crash. I believe nine reports are from LA Police Department that nine people died in this crash. I mean, that's an awfully difficult thing to think about going forward as well, is Vanessa Bryant has a young baby, and I think a three-year-old in addition to they have a 17-year-old daughter, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, the family tragedy, leaving aside the sports aspect of this, is another element of this that I think will linger forever in the LA sports market, right? But, I mean, the family angle on this is difficult for anybody out there who's married, and again, I say the reason why I think this has such resonance is his age, and also because it combines the two biggest fears of every parent. I mean, I just come back to it again and again, because as soon as you have a kid, the worst thing that can happen is something awful happening to one of your children, and then something awful happening to you such that you can't raise those children into adulthood. Those are, I would say, the two biggest fears of every parent.
Yeah, it's the sum of all fears, you know. We've known that Kobe commuted in a helicopter for decades, you know, and that's was one of the things about Kobe Bryant that was different. You know, most L.A. Lakers and as you know, guys, you know, on the L.A. Kings, they practice near the airport. Most of them live in Manhattan Beach or in the marina or on the west side. You know, Kobe lived on the Newport Coast, you know, which is an hour and 10 minutes from downtown, if you're lucky. And of course he was commuting by helicopter, you know, for I think, you know, at least half his career down the stretch. And it was always something, you know, that people talked about. And, you know, I think within the next few weeks, you're going to start getting, you know, a lot of aviation talk and, you know, the black box and the tracking of that stuff. But, you know, through that conversation, the bottom of it is that, you know, nine people lost their lives really tragically, and everybody wants to, you know, wake up and feel like it didn't happen, you know, because it does feel really surreal. And I just think it's going to be, I don't know what direction it's all going to go in, but it's all going to be kind of a processing period. I guess I would imagine that they're going to have a funeral at Staples Center, at least some kind of service or public event that, you know, is going to be sold out to the point where there's going to be people out in the street. I mean, it's going to be a lot.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, I would imagine that will be aired, you know, on every major sports network as sort of a communal grieving opportunity. And that's why I circle back around to almost the idea of Princess Di. If you are old enough to remember when that happened in 1997, obviously that was in England, but if you think about the way that people responded there, even you're talking about, you know, there's going to be points of grief where people are coming to lay all sorts of flowers and mementos of Kobe Bryant's career, much like they did for her, because again, it's a global icon taken in a staggering way. And much like with Lady Di, you know, where you had Princess Di, where you had the two kids who were still young, I think, you know, and to a certain extent, JFK, right? I mean, these situations where someone dies and they have young kids, it strikes people
about
in a particular way. You think about JFK Jr., you know, doing the salute for his dad. And you think about, you know, Prince William and what's the
Harry.
Other one's name? Harry, there you go. Walking around in the funeral procession behind their mom's casket, and how devastating that was for them at young ages. And again, Kobe's children, the surviving three, and Vanessa as well, is going to be a really difficult scenario going forward.
Yeah, those will be the images, I think, you know, that'll be the next to come, you know, that people are going to deal with. And then, of course, you know, there's all the stories, you know, like every single media person in LA, you know, has a Kobe story about covering Kobe. You know, Matt
right.
and I, of course, you know, have the same kinds of memories. And I guess, you know, that it helps people to just, you know, have this kind of conversation after, you know, something so abrupt, or, you know, it helps people obviously to be in community and get together. But it is going to be this is going to be a very difficult time in the city, that goes without saying. And it's kind of eclipsing everything, you know. I mean, there you are at the Super Bowl, which is, you know, this giant monetary celebration annually and a great opportunity for everybody to make money. And it doesn't seem like anybody can even bring themselves to smile right now,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, which is understandable. It's, it really, you know, there's people that lose their lives in this city every day, obviously. But, you know, when so many people relate their own lives with just watching somebody for years, and, you know, Vanessa Bryant's not a very public person, but Kobe and the girls very much were, and him and his daughter Gianna, those images are going to be, you know, just kind of burned in our minds for forever. And but I'm not really sure, you know, where the coverage and conversation is going to go, because we're kind of in uncharted territory.
Yeah, there's no doubt at all. Petros, I know it's going to be a rough day for you guys and for many of the L.A. sports fan community and beyond. Appreciate you getting up so early with us, and good luck with your own show later this afternoon.
Thank you, Clay, and enjoy your week down there in Miami with everybody.
Will do my best.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Kobe Bryant, one of the few things he didn't do well was the music game, and there you go.
That song makes me smile.
Just how awkward it is?
Well, I was a young program director in Southern California. This was around 99, 2000 when he did that song with Tyra Banks.
Yeah.
And Shaq, a couple of years earlier, had come out with a song called Straight Playin', produced by DJ Quick. Now, Shaq's vocals were good, but DJ Quick's beat was way better. It made it a really good song. So it got a lot of play, especially in California. Kobe called me with his Sony rep and wanted to know why we weren't playing his song the way we played Shaq's song.
Oh, really?
And it was a great three-way call. I'm nervous as hell.
Kobe was actually on the call.
On the call. And I'm like, and he told me, he's like, you know, speak frankly with me. Do you think it sucks?
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know.
You didn't speak frankly with him.
Well, I tried. I was like, you know, I kind of hinted around that the production quality wasn't as good as Shaq's song. And, you know, later when I got to meet Kobe in person, he told me, so do you think I needed a DJ Quick beat? Would that have got you to play my record? He was such a competitive guy that he was pissed off that Shaq got played on the radio and he didn't. So every time I hear that Kobe song, I smile and think of the time I got so nervous on the Sony call.
We're obviously going to bring in the crew now with a lot of people in L.A. Danny G and Roberto are big Laker fans, but Dub, we haven't given you a chance to weigh in. You're basically the Kobe Bryant generation. I mean, you're only 25 years old, so you effectively grew up with Kobe. Do you kind of see him as the Jordan of your generation?
I mean, yeah, there's no doubt. When, you know, he was at his peak, I was in elementary school all the way through high school. So obviously, for just a sports-obsessed kid, and there's so many other people just like me growing up, I mean, he was our Jordan, because I never got to see Jordan play, you know, in person. I was too young. And, you know, me being from San Antonio, you know, such a huge part of my childhood was this, the great battles between the Lakers and the Spurs growing up, both just unbelievable teams with all-time great players, with, you know, Kobe Bryant and Tim Duncan. And yesterday I just finished playing golf with my friend and his dad, and we were sitting having some lunch, and I look at my phone, and Steve Gorman texted me, and, you know, we talk, but not, you know, very regularly. And he sent me the link to the story, and I was just totally in shock. And then later on yesterday afternoon, the Spurs had their game with the Raptors, and they panned to Tim Duncan on the bench, and, you know, he was wiping tears away from his face, man. And that just absolutely crushed me. So it was a tough day for me, and, you know, so many other people, because, like you said, I mean, I grew up with Kobe, and he was like a god to a 10 or 11 year old kid growing up who was just obsessed with sports. So, I mean, it was a it was definitely a tough day yesterday.
No doubt. Eddie, you do the updates, and we joke you've been doing them forever. This is, I mean, you would probably have a better idea of trying to contextualize maybe a tragic moment in the world of sports. Dale Earnhardt Sr., a long time ago, Roberto Clemente, Thurman Munson. These are relatively rare instances where someone sort of in the prime of their life is struck down so unexpectedly. Contextualizing, can you think of very many situations like these?
No, I really can't, since I've been working here, which is over 18 years, and I can't even imagine having to be on the air while that happened. Certainly, it's our job to, you know, convey our thoughts and put things into words, but, you know, when you're giving these updates and, you know, you actually think about I'm delivering this news to people who don't know it and what their reaction is going to be to it, it's kind of a powerful feeling. But I was out and about a lot yesterday here in Los Angeles, just running a lot of errands, going to different places, you know, Home Depot, grocery store. My wife and I went out to dinner last night at a really busy Mexican restaurant. And it was, it's not overstating it to say that this city is in mourning. It was a really odd feeling to be out and about. It just kind of felt like it was hanging over the city. And, you know, we were at a restaurant, like I said, we had like five TVs in there. They were all on different channels, some local, some national, and everything. Every TV had Kobe on it. And people, there were certainly people talking and, you know, enjoying their company with their friends and family. But there wasn't a lot of laughing. It wasn't very loud in a busy restaurant. It was a really odd and sad day here yesterday.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it's incredibly sobering. And you mentioned, I think we do need to mention this, like the media did not do itself very many favors yesterday in the way this story was covered in general. Because if you're active on social media, there were, and Eddie, you can probably speak to this too, but there were so many inaccuracies that were spread out there by many national news outlets. That really, I mean, it's just it's unfortunate. I don't know why people feel the need to rush to be first on life or death type situations. But there were reports that all of Kobe Bryant's daughters had been on the helicopter. They got the number of deaths totally wrong for hours on end. And this is one of those stories where, again, it's tragic that it happens. But the tragedy is in many ways compounded by the initial reports of how the news gets out there, right, Eddie? I mean, you guys have to decide when you go on the radio what you can say that's accurate and what's not. And there's a lot of stuff out there that was just plainly not inaccurate, like a huge percentage of the initial reports surrounding this story.
Yeah, and you know, social media can be a valuable tool, but it's also full of some landmines as well. It's kind of funny. I was with some people when the news broke, and someone had told us, you know, he just saw it on his phone. And me being the, you know, reporter guy, the first thing I said is, "Who's reporting that? Where are you seeing this from?"
Yeah, right.
And he said, "Everyone's reporting it." So I picked up my phone and I immediately went to Adrian Wojnarowski and saw that he said it's confirmed. And I said, "Well, it is true." It's, you know, so yeah, you have to be very careful. And like you said, with social media and everything gets out there so quickly, you can fall into that trap as well, but you just have to be very smart about it.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by Doug Gottlieb. Doug, you knew Kobe personally. You guys lived not far apart from each other. You're both raising young families. What was your reaction when you heard the news?
Well, I'll paint a picture for you. So I did Kentucky, Texas Tech on Saturday night. I had to get up super early, fly back halfway across the country because my daughter Harper had a writing show, my son had a baseball and basketball game. So I just wanted to, get, you know, one extra day in before I head out to Miami. So my daughter gets done writing and she did really well. I come over and she's bawling. Now we had gotten, everybody was on Twitter, you know, with the story that from TMZ. And she said, my friend died in a helicopter crash. I was like, no, Gianna wasn't on it. But she knew Gianna from going, she went to school with Gianna for a couple of years and there's, kind of ran in the same circles. And she said, no, you know, my my friend Alyssa died. And I was like, what? And so this, it's for me personally, Clay, just full disclosure, those are all Newport Beach families. That's where we live. Not only did I know Kobe, we knew two of the other families. And Mrs. Mauser is like my daughter's PE teacher, and she leaves three kids. So it's a very local tragedy as well as like an international one. It's so sad.
So you knew multiple of these families that were involved. Yeah. What was Kobe like in your experience since he finished playing basketball, right, as a dad? Everybody knows Kobe, the basketball player.
So it's interesting. You know, the first time I moved to California from I was at CBS, we put our kids in that same school, and that was the year he tore his Achilles tendon. And I'm telling you, he was around there. I think that year changed him. That year kind of saved him and made him this business mogul he became, because before that he was so singularly focused on like winning more championships and catching Mike. He was not, it's not like he had great balance, but he was a pretty balanced guy. Like he was very serious about the Mamba. First it was volleyball, and then it was basketball. His oldest played volleyball. And you know, like he would send me videos of plays they were running, and he was super involved in it. So as a dad and like a coach, he was hardcore. They practiced 5-6 days a week, and you know, kind of no excuses, but and he'd get into the games. But yeah, I mean, he was like a super coach dad guy who organized this basketball program that all the girls are going to high school together next year, and then you know, they're all going to go play in college. It's pretty amazing stuff he was doing.
And obviously, like, the transition that he had, you just spoke to it, from athlete to dad to post-retirement. A lot of athletes struggle with that. He didn't seem to. I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, his life seemed like it was almost just starting in many ways.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, I mean, like, I wasn't a huge Kobe fan. And the more we got to know each other, like, yeah, he's obviously very, very bright. You know, like, there are guys that we give credit for being bright because, you know, they say the right thing in front of the camera. But, like, you spend a little time with Kobe Bryant, you start talking about what he was doing in entertainment and the people that he was kind of commissioning to write books and all this creativity. I mean, it was a little over the top, but, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. And I think what we misjudged, because I was talking to Rick Bucher and Chris Broussard about this, is everybody in basketball is like, dude, Kobe can't be a GM, right? He can't relate to people that don't work as hard as he is. He can't be a president. And what's he going to do? Well, he turned that kind of competitive nature into all this other kind of all the business enterprises. It's really interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure had he not torn his Achilles tendon if he'd be in the same place, but he was a pretty interesting guy. He was up at 4 o'clock every morning working out at Equinox. Like he was crazy, insane work ethic even after he got done playing.
You talked about the tragedy it's a global story, but it's also a local tragedy for many communities in L.A. How do they recover? And how do people in your community recover?
I mean, he just becomes, you know, another Southern California icon that's gone too early. You know, sadly, like he was the picture of health, right? But I think, it's a really interesting, I mean, how about the fact that it happens the day after LeBron passes him in all-time scoring, right? And, I don't think, it's still Kobe's town, and now it'll always, I mean, I almost feel sympathy for LeBron in that sense, and he could win 3 more championships, and still Kobe, it's Kobe's town. It's a fascinating dynamic that he, you know, started sitting courtside with Gianna for Hawks games because Trae Young's her favorite player, and then you know, he started coming more to Lakers games and interacting more. And, you know, it's interesting. When he played, Clay, guys didn't like him. He was respected. Nobody liked him. Now, before he died, if you would have polled NBA players, like, who's your favorite player of all time? I guarantee he would have won. And it's crazy. Like, he's way more liked now than when he was as a player. It's a really interesting dynamic.
I know you got television to do and radio to do later today. We'll see each other down in Miami, I'm sure, sometime soon here. But enjoy the day, knock it out, and thanks for coming on with us.
All right, brother. Talk soon.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.